Chapter 3 I didn't unmute Sybil until I reached Magic Heights.
"Do I even need to say anything?"
she said as I parked my truck across the street from my new unit. I sighed and stepped out onto the sidewalk, which was lined with flowering dogwood trees despite the fact that it was the middle of July and the cement ceiling of the skyways overhead blocked every photon of sunlight. Ah, the perks of living in a magical neighborhood. I missed them.
"You have to know how stupid that was," my AI went on. "We're supposed to be earning money, not wasting it."
"I thought you said you weren't going to say anything," I grumbled, scanning the row of brick townhouses to find the one-eyed one. And it was a calculated risk.
"There was nothing calculated about it,"
she shouted, making my ears ring.
"You got carried away, just like you always do. And now you're screwed again. Just like always."
"I don't need this right now," I said, reaching for her mute button again, only to discover that it had vanished from my interface.
"Sybil!" "No,"
she said sharply.
"You told me 2 weeks ago that if you didn't get it together by this Friday, we were done for. You ordered me to make sure you didn't go off track. But then, when I try to do my job, you go and mute me. How am I supposed to help you if you won't help yourself?"
"I am helping myself," I yelled, drawing strange looks from the pack of university students walking on the other side of the road. "You saw the other auctions. There was nothing. This is the best lead I've had in months. If I can get my hands on even a quarter of those reagents, I'll have enough to make my debt payments and cover rent for the rest of the summer. That's worth a gamble."
"On 100, maybe,"
Sybil said.
"But 2,000? That's all the money you had left."
"I know, I know, I know," I said, scrubbing my hands through my sweaty hair. "I get it, okay? But done is done. The money's gone, and I can't bid on another auction until tomorrow morning. There's no turning things around tonight, so let's just go inside and see if we can make my money back." Sybil made a sound so frustrated it would have made her emotional development programmer cry. But she didn't say another word. When I was certain she was done, I reached into the neck of my poncho and pulled out my master key, scurrying across the quiet street to the townhouse at the end of the row. My target. It was a lot nicer than I'd anticipated. From the picture, I'd expected another basement apartment, but the address was for the entire townhouse. It was a corner unit, too. Sure, the western wall was built right up against the massive cement cliff of a skyway support beam, which meant the whole place rattled whenever a big truck drove overhead, but it only had neighbors on one side. The street was quiet and tree-lined, too. All huge luxuries in the underground. The pale pink paint job on the brick exterior was a little odd, but overall it was a charming little house, which made no sense given everything else I'd seen today. "I don't get it," I said, pushing open the chain-link gate that separated the townhouse's postage stamp yard from the sidewalk. "If he had a place like this, why did he die locked in that hole?"
"You said yourself that the sub-basement was probably a safe house,"
Sybil reminded me.
"If that's right, then it makes total sense that he'd run there after his door was kicked in."
I shook my head. "We don't know if this happened before or after his death. Seeing how both of his units came up for auction on the same day, though, I bet the timing was close." More than close. I was already putting the timeline together in my head. Something had made this man feel threatened, so he'd fled to his safe house. When the people who'd made him afraid realized he was gone, they'd smashed up his home. The only question left was why.
"I bet it was money,"
Sybil said when I mentioned it.
"Someone had to foot the bill for all those reagents, and kicking indoors is classic loan shark behavior."
As usual, my AI had a good point. But as we climbed the cement steps to the townhome's tiny porch, I couldn't shake the feeling that there was more to it. I'd cleaned abandoned apartments for plenty of loan shark victims, and in my experience, debt collectors broke bones, not stuff. Stuff could be sold to pay back the loan. But whoever had broken into this place didn't seem to care about stuff at all. a suspicion that became cold, hard fact when we reached the unit's door. "Wow," I said. The front door wasn't just kicked off its hinges. It had been annihilated. There wasn't even a splinter left for my master key to unlock. Just a few lines of yellow caution tape collections had placed over the empty doorway to keep random people from wandering in. The spellwork I'd spotted on the doorframe was still there, but now that I was standing on top of it, I could see that huge portions were burned black, probably from trying to stop whoever had busted their way in here. And then busted their way through everything else, if the living room was any indication. "Were they getting paid by the piece?" I asked, looking around at the furniture, or what was left of it. The living room had looked plain old trashed in the picture, but now that I was actually here, I could see that every stick of furniture had been carefully and methodically broken into segments no longer than an inch. The sofa looked like a pile of cotton confetti, and the glass coffee table had been smashed back into sand. The pictures on the walls, more museum photos of ancient alchemical artifacts, though much higher quality ones than what I'd found in the basement apartment, had been bashed out of their frames and shredded into streamers. Even the built-in bookcases had been pried out of their nooks, the books methodically ripped in half, which was just obscene. Unlike the collection I'd gone through this morning, there'd been some nice stuff in here, and it was all ruined.
"I don't understand," Sybil said, turning my cameras slowly to get a panorama of the destruction. "What kind of robber kicks in a door and then sits around breaking valuables into tiny pieces?"
"None," I said, pulling a fistful of magic into my hand and slapping it against my poncho to activate all of my personal wards. "This wasn't a robbery. They were looking for something." And I bet I knew what. I reached into my bag for the notes I was still carrying. Of everything in that basement apartment, these were what our poor dead mage had chosen to hide, which meant they were probably what the people who'd broken in here had been looking for. I had them now, though, and if there was something worth finding here, I was certain these notes were the key to it. "All right, Sybil," I said, pointing at the line of chicken scratch Heidi had identified as the spell's main variable. "Add this to your photo recognition library, and let's see if we can't find something interesting."
"Or we could leave," Sybil suggested. "There's still time to cut our losses and bail."
"Why would we do that?" I demanded. "We just got a hint that this gamble might actually pay out.
What happened to Oh Opal? We need to make money."
"It got preempted by Oh Opal. We need to stay alive,"
my AI said nervously, darting my cameras toward the other rooms, which were also filled with meticulously broken furniture.
"Does nothing about this make you think that perhaps we're stepping into something we shouldn't? People who do this to furniture are also capable of doing it to human bodies, and I'm pretty sure I'll be deleted if you get yourself killed."
"It'll be fine," I assured her, scraping my boot across the floor. "Look at the dust. No one's been here in weeks. Even if someone was watching, I'm just a cleaner doing my job. Nothing suspicious at all. Now are you going to help me or not?" Sybil heaved a recorded sigh.
"Hold it up."
I fanned the pages of spellwork out in front of me, and then held still while Sybil took her pictures. When she'd finished scanning all the parts I wanted for photo recognition, I stuck the notes back into my bag and pulled my hood up so my wards protected my head. "I want all cameras on lookout," I ordered, pulling on my rubber gloves. "I'll do the cleaning. You keep your eyes open."
"Yes, ma'am,"
she said, turning my cameras to get a 360-degree view of the room.
"But what are we looking for exactly?"
I took a deep breath as I stared at the remains of the destroyed life I'd bought for $2,000. Anything. Anything turned out to be not as much as I thought. The townhouse was smaller than it had looked from the outside. Just two floors, and both of them were busted. Even the brooms in the pantry had been broken in half. I grabbed one anyway, using the bristles like a shovel to push the pulverized furniture into a pile,
while my cameras searched for some sign there'd ever been anything interesting here. But while our mage had clearly been a huge fan of putting spellwork on things, it was all basic utility stuff. An anti-mildew ward in the bathroom, a heating spell for his chair, that sort of thing. There was definitely no giant magical circle full of cockatrice eggs or giant treasure chest full of reagents. I didn't let that get me down, though, because I'd seen the receipts. I knew he'd already bought everything he'd needed for that spell, which meant it had to be somewhere. If it wasn't here in his smashed house, that greatly increased the odds of it being whole and together somewhere else. I just had to find out where.
Is there anything left in the house's computer?
I asked Sybil when we'd turned over every bit of wreckage.
A saved locations file, rent payments for another address, anything like that?
Nada, my AI said. I got into the home network while you were still climbing the front steps, but everything was already wiped. That's typical, though. I mean, when have we ever cleaned a place that's had old data lying around?
Fair point, I said grumpily, leaning against the kitchen wall, which for some inexplicable reason was painted bright canary yellow.
We could try asking the neighbors, Sybil suggested. This much destruction must have been loud. I bet someone heard it.
I snorted. This is the DFZ underground. No one hears anything. At least not for free. If I'd had cash to spare, I probably could have gotten someone to talk, but I'd spent too much on this already, and I was beginning to worry I'd never get it back. I was racking my brain to think of a new angle when something made me freeze. It was hard to say what. I hadn't seen or heard anything specific, but something had caught my body's attention, and I'd learned to pay attention to things like that.
What's wrong? Sybil asked.
I waved my hand to bring up my AR keyboard. Not sure, I typed.
What do you want to do?
She typed back, which I appreciated even though no one could hear her voice but me. I moved closer to the kitchen window, pulling magic into my hands as I went, just in case. Get me a shot of the street. My cameras whirred in reply, and I leaned forward just enough to slip the lens mounted on the edge of my goggles past the window frame. Even with my night vision filter, though, I didn't see anything. Just the tree-lined street out front, which was just as picturesque as it had been when I'd come in. Though a bit rowdier, since this was a college neighborhood and it was closing in on 9 o'clock. Prime party time. Releasing the magic I'd gathered, I stepped away from the window, careful to stay out of line of sight. It was probably nothing, but I'd come by my paranoia honestly, and I'd learned to trust it. If I felt like something was wrong, something almost always was, which meant it was time to pick up the pace.
Change of plans, I said, kneeling on the floor. We're going to try some magic.
Are you sure? Sybil asked nervously. Not to bring you down, but your spell work is... not the best. Not that you're not fantastic when it comes to blowing stuff up on the fly, but...
It's okay, you don't have to sweet-talk me, I said, digging around in my bag for the tiny nubbin of casting chalk I carried specifically for times like this. I've had 20 years of the best experts money can buy telling me in excruciating detail exactly how much my spellwork sucks. I know it's not my strong suit, but there are some things you just can't do by throwing a bunch of magic around. It's all right, though. Even I can manage something like this. Especially if the alternative was leaving empty-handed. Just go online and look me up a tracing spell. A simple one, please.
Sybil had a whole list up before I'd finished my request, which would have been impressive if I hadn't known how easy they were to find. Tracing spells were grade school level magic. All you needed was a piece of whatever you were looking for. A splinter, a crumb, a hair, and the spell would do the rest. There were limits, of course. Distance, importance of the object being used as a link, and whether the thing you were looking for was inside a ward or not were all factors. But finding spells were famously flexible. And, most importantly for me, forgiving. I just hoped there was something here for me to find.
All right, I said, tapping on the spell whose description looked the closest to what I wanted to do. Let's give this a try. I swept my arm across the kitchen floor to create a clean spot and drew a circle on the tile with my chalk. I hadn't done this in a while, so my first few were more like ovals, but that was why I used casting chalk and not markers. Every time it came out wrong, I just erased the line and tried again, drawing and redrawing, until at last I had a more or less perfect circle. I copied the spell work next, blatantly stealing from the example spell Sybil had looked up for me. But while that covered the basics, nothing could help with the hardest part, modifying the spell work to fit my custom search parameters.
"What are you even going to search for?" Sybil asked.
I rustled the stack of notes at her, and my AI made a choking sound.
"That's not going to work."
"Why not?" I asked, dropping the pages into the middle of the circle I'd just drawn. "He wrote all this stuff himself. Why can't I use it to find more?"
"That's not the problem," she said. "I'm sure you'll find tons of custom spell work, because this house is filled with the stuff. But unless you're looking for his anti-soap scum charm, it's not going to do you any good."
"Ah," I said with a grin. "But all of those charms are broken. I'm going to use this to find something that isn't."
"And do what with it?"
I hadn't figured that part out yet, but I was getting desperate. If I couldn't turn up something good here, then I'd spend all of my money on nothing. That was enough to inspire some serious creative thinking, and soon I had the spell modified for what I thought would lead to what I wanted. The only way to know for sure was to test it, though. So I reached out and grabbed the ambient magic floating through the house, shoving power by the fistful into the circle I'd drawn on the kitchen floor, until the spell work was glowing like phosphorus. When I couldn't push any more in, I took a deep breath and removed my gloves, placing my bare fingers on the chalk circle that was now vibrating with magic. "Please work," I whispered, closing my eyes. "Please." The circle pulsed with enough power to knock me on my ass. When I scrambled up again, every bit of still functional spellwork in the house was glowing like neon. "Huh," I said, grinning at the lights that now surrounded me on all sides. "What do you know? It worked."
"Only because the spellwork you stole was foolproof," Sybil chided, her voice staticky thanks to the mud-thick magic that now filled the house. "You always put too much power in."
I shrugged. "Go big or go home."
"You're lucky you didn't blow the whole place sky high," my AI went on. "It's a good thing you're used to a lot of magic, or you'd be bleeding like a stuck pig right now."
I was bleeding a little from my nose, but Sybil hadn't noticed yet, so I saw no reason to tell her. I was too busy scouring the house for any spellwork I hadn't noticed earlier. As Sybil had predicted, there were a lot of false positives. Pretty much everywhere you could put spellwork, our mage had crammed it in. But I'd combed through the house pretty thoroughly by this point, so I was able to quickly dismiss the stuff I'd already seen. I was looking for something new, something I hadn't seen in my earlier searching. And a few minutes later, I found it.
Gotcha!
It was in the pantry, buried under a bunch of boxes of instant potatoes the people who'd been through this place had torn apart and left in a pile. But underneath the white flakes and green flecks of freeze-dried parsley, something was shining. A lot of something. And that gave me hope. I grabbed my broom, sweeping the potato flakes out into the kitchen to reveal the pantry's floor. But the glowing spellwork wasn't on the tiles. It was under them, the blaze of my finding spell shining up through the cracks in the mortar.
"That's what I'm talking about,"
I said excitedly, reaching for my pocket knife. I was grinning so hard my face hurt when the blade slid easily between the clay tiles, popping one up to reveal a hidden space below the floor. And shoved into that space was a warded box exactly like the one I'd found under the dead mage's bed.
"Huh," Sybil said. "I guess I owe you an apology."
"You owe me a lot more than that,"
I said joyfully as I grabbed my tongs out of my bag, because I was not going to get bitten this time. I want to hear you saying I was right for a week when I pay off all my... My voice trailed off. When the rubber-tipped tongs had closed around the box, the wart on its surface had vanished. There was no crack, no snap of power. It just stopped glowing, as if it had turned itself off. Scowling, I set the tongs on the floor and grabbed the box with my gloved hands, bracing for the bite. But nothing happened. It was just a box. An actual shoebox this time for a pair of faux leather loafers in men's size 10. Hopes sinking, I pulled off the lid. And then I groaned aloud. Oh, come on! It was full of papers. Yellow legal pad papers this time, all folded in half and covered in the same janky chicken scratch handwriting I was starting to loathe.
This guy really needs a better filing system,
Sybil said as I dumped the papers out into my lap.
So what is it? More spell work?
It wasn't, actually. When I spread the papers out flat in the light from my headlamp, I saw that the writing was plain old-fashioned English. There was still a good bit of spellwork notation in the margins, but most of the pages were just long columns of short sentences that said things like, confirm stabilization at 9.4, and double check for contaminants, RE transmorph vivication.
Great, my AI said. You found his to-do list.
That's still something, I said stubbornly, thumbing through the pages. He wouldn't have hidden it if it wasn't important. There had to be something here. I read each page all the way through, but they were all just more of the same lists and notes that meant nothing without context. The only really remarkable thing I found was an old staff ID from MIT Thaumaturgical, with a picture of a stately-looking gentleman in his 50s that vaguely matched the decaying corpse I'd found this morning. There was also a name. Dr. Theodore Lyle, I read.
Huh. Looks like our guy was a professor.
That's not surprising, Sybil said. This is Magic Heights. And he's a former professor. According to the MIT's online staff directory, Dr. Theodore Lyle retired 2 years ago.
I sat back on my heels to think that through. This was a pretty nice house by underground standards. Too nice to afford on a university pension. Add in the rent on his basement bolt hole and 200 grand he'd spent on reagents, and it was obvious someone was providing Dr. Lyle with supplemental funding. Probably someone not very nice, given the state of his house and how he'd died. But that actually worked out in my favor. I would have felt bad taking the life's work of a poor dead mage from his next of kin, but I was totally fine with ripping off house-smashing sleazebags. It wouldn't even be stealing. By the law of the DFZ, everything in here belonged to me now, including any clues to potential giant payoffs. I just had to figure out where it was, because I didn't see anything like the big circle from Dr. Lyle's ritual notes glowing through my finding spell. It had to be somewhere, though. Frowning, I turned back to the pile of paper in my lap, paging through the lists for an address or coordinates. Anything that might tell me where he'd actually done all the magical minutiae he'd written these lists to remind himself to do. But while I didn't find anything actually useful, I did notice on my second time through that the pages were dated at the top. The latest was just over a month ago, probably only a few days before he'd died. It was also the messiest, the lined paper crinkled and torn at the top as though it had been ripped out in a hurry. I was scanning the list to see why this one was special when I saw something at the bottom that made me freeze. Burn material links. Stock food. 60 days. Move final reagents to ritual location. Parse cords to VCI. They were all crossed out. But that only made me more excited. Because this proved I was right. There was a separate ritual location. All the materials had already been moved there, too, which meant that somewhere,
Presumably, wherever VCI was, there was a ritual worth 200 grand just waiting to be scooped up. "Sybil," I said, shoving the new notes into my bag next to the old ones. "What does VCI mean?"
"A lot of stuff," my AI said, bringing up a depressingly long list of acronyms. "Venture Capital Investments, Vital Communications Infrastructure, Veterinary Council of Indiana. Take your pick."
With a huff of frustration, I started reading, flicking my finger to scroll the list as I searched for the combination V, C, and I words that would make sense in this context. I was still looking when I got that watched feeling again. It was a lot stronger this time. I'd been focusing on my AR display, so again, I couldn't say what had caused it, but my whole body was on alert. I was about to ask Sybil to play back the last 30 seconds of ambient audio when something slammed into my head. The first thing I felt was pressure. The impact was hard enough to send me flying back into the pantry, but banging my elbows on the shelves when I caught myself hurt a lot more than my head did. I was scrambling to figure out how that could be when I saw the flattened bullet hit the floor beside my feet with a musical ping. The world slowed to a crawl. Gasping for breath, I grabbed my warded poncho, which was no longer glowing with the magic I'd put into it. That had all been burned up when my ward against bullets had done its job and stopped the slug on the floor from entering my brain. The pressure I'd felt had been the counterforce of the spell blocking the shot and sending me flying as a result. But while I was definitely going to leave a glowing review for my store-bought wards the next time I was online, I now had a huge problem. Because that ward had a one-time use, and I still didn't know who was shooting at me.
"Duck!"
I hit the ground before Sybil finished her warning, getting out of the way just in time as the second shot landed in the drywall behind me. My new position had me prone and cornered in the pantry, but at least I could see the shooter. It was a man. More than that was hard to say since he was wearing baggy black clothes and AR goggles very similar to my own. He must have been in good shape, though, because he was perched in the crown of the dogwood tree just outside the open kitchen window, the one that had given me the creeps before. He was already moving his pistol to adjust for my new position, and I cursed myself for an idiot. I should have listened to my instincts earlier. I should have listened to Sybil and never bid in the first place. Now I was going to die on the floor of Dr. Lyle's filthy townhouse, and I wasn't even getting paid for it. But then, just as I was pulling magic into my hands for a desperate attack, I knew perfectly well I'd never get off in time. Something incredible happened. A man wearing a black leather bomber jacket and the same knee-high, everything-proof cleaner boots that I used walked calmly into my tunneled vision and reached through the window with both arms to shove the shooter out of the tree. It happened so fast, I wasn't sure it had actually happened at all, until the strange man turned around and grabbed my arm, lifting me off the floor as if I weighed nothing.
"You okay?"
he asked in Nick Koss's voice. I couldn't answer. The fight or flight was pounding in me so hard my whole body was vibrating. If he hadn't had my arm locked in a grip of iron, I would have already been sprinting for the exit. But he did, which turned out to be a very good thing when another man dressed in the same dark clothes and goggles as the shooter, who was now cursing up a storm at the base of the dogwood tree, walked through the kitchen door. I heard the shot before I saw the gun. The crack went off like a firework in my ear, but the bullet didn't touch me, because at the last second, the man holding my arm leaned in to block the shot with his shoulder. It was at this point that my poor, reeling brain seized on to two very important facts. One, it was Nicola Koss who'd come to my rescue, and two, the black bomber jacket he always wore no matter the weather was armored. I saw the ballistics inside it ripple right in front of my nose when the bullet bounced off Nick's shoulder. He didn't even stagger, just took the shot like a wall. I was still staring in wonder when I saw the man who'd fired at us cock his gun to shoot again. As he re-aimed the barrel at my face, the fight-or-flight instinct that had been warring inside me suddenly and definitively pinned itself on fight.
"You asshole!"
I screamed, lobbing the magic I'd pulled into my hand earlier over Nick's shoulder at the shooter. I didn't even bother to shape it into anything. I just threw the raw power as hard as I could, creating a shockwave that exploded against the man's chest, flinging him backward into the living room. Do you know how much I paid for this place? I might not have been the best at spell work, but when it came to fast reactions, no one had me beat. I had the next handful of magic ready before my assailant hit the ground, and I was about to shove it in his face when Nick let go of my arm and pulled a gun of his own. He moved so fast I didn't even see where the weapon came from. The sleek black pistol just appeared in his hand and fired, sinking a bullet deep into the right calf of the man I'd just knocked to the floor. The scream wasn't even out of his mouth before Nick was on top of him, kicking the dropped gun away and planting his steel-toed cleaning boot on the man's chest. The guy started thrashing when Nick's weight landed, his wounded leg getting blood all over the floor I'd just swept up. I was worried he was going to kick his way to freedom by pure panicked accident when Nick calmly reached down and ripped the AR goggles off the terrified man's face before pointing his gun at the spot where they'd been. He was tightening his finger on the trigger when I finally realized what was happening. "Hey, whoa!" I said, running forward to grab Nick's elbow before he executed a man in front of me. "Don't kill him!" Nick's gray eyes flicked back toward me.
"I wasn't going to," he said. "Not yet, anyway. But why do you care? He was going to kill you."
That was a good point. But while I'd been totally okay with crushing him to death myself, not 10 seconds ago, that had been in self-defense. This was just murder. And despite what some people assumed about me, I was not okay with that. "Well, he's not killing me now," I said, glancing out the kitchen window where I could see the first guy, the one Nick had pushed out of the tree, sprinting down the street as fast as his legs could carry him. "Crisis has been averted, so let's take it down a notch."
"Yeah, man,"
the guy on the floor said in a panicked voice.
"Listen to the lady and take it down a—"
He cut off when Nick's eyes flicked back to him, his arms shooting up over his head in surrender.
"Good," Nick said, though he didn't lower his gun. "Now, who hired you to watch this building?"
"We weren't watching nothing,"
the man said in a panicked rush.
"We were just scoping the neighborhood when we saw the cleaner go in, and we thought—"
He cut off with a curse when Nick fired a shot into the floor beside his head. I jumped too, flinging up my hands to protect my face from the wood the shot sent flying.
"Who hired you?"
Nick asked again in the same calm voice he'd used when he asked me about being sold a coffin.
"No one,"
the man cried.
"Who'd hire guys to watch a house that's already been robbed?"
That struck me as a sensible question, but Nick didn't even blink.
"If you knew it had already been robbed, why would you set a trap for the cleaner?"
he asked, pointing his pistol dead between the man's eyes.
"You knew she wouldn't have anything, but your partner was already in that tree when she arrived, so clearly something else was going on. Why don't you stop lying and tell me what it was?"
"Wait," I said, frowning at Nick. "How do you know he was in the tree when I got here?"
"I don't know, man,"
the guy on the floor said at the same time.
"It was just a job. We got it off the freelancer board. We were supposed to watch this place, and if anyone came looking for stuff, we were supposed to take whatever they found and bring it to a Dropbox downtown."
Nick tilted his head.
"Just take? Not shoot."
"That was Andy's idea,"
the man insisted, flicking his eyes frantically toward the kitchen window where the first guy had been waiting.
"He was the one who said we should shoot first because it was a mage. You have to get the drop on mages before they see you or they'll fry you like a catfish."
He glanced at me.
"No offense, miss. We didn't mean nothing by it. It was just a job."
He gave me a little shrug as if that excused everything. But I take getting shot very personally. I was about to tell Sybil to call the cops when Nick lifted his boot off the guy's chest.
"Get out."
The man on the floor blinked.
"Wait, for real?"
"Are you serious?" I said at the same time. "He tried to murder us."
"He tried,"
Nick agreed, hitching the bottom hem of his jacket up to slide his pistol into the chest holster hidden beneath it.
but he failed.
So what? I cried. Even in the DFZ, attempted murder is illegal. We should call the police.
Nick arched a dark eyebrow at me.
The average DFZ PD response time for a non-life-threatening event in the underground is 2 hours. Do you really want to stand around watching him for that long?
Not particularly.
Still. You can't just let him go.
Why not?
Nick asked, tilting his head as though he truly did not understand the question.
You heard what he said. It was just a job. It's not like he's a stalker who's going to hunt you down, right?
He glanced at the man, who frantically shook his head no.
There you go,
Nick said, turning back to me.
But we don't know who he's working for yet,
I pointed out.
Neither does he,
Nick said.
And you believe him?
Nick gave me that infuriating shrug of his, and I reached up to rub my throbbing temples.
Look, I said at last, even if he doesn't know whom he's working for, he's still a dangerous criminal. You can't just let him run free. What if he tries to murder someone else?
That's their problem, Nick said. There's always someone willing to shoot someone else for money. If he doesn't take the job, someone else will. But if you get him booked for attempted murder, we'll be dragged into court every few weeks for the next year. That's a punishment for us, not him. And I'd rather not pay my time for his crime.
That made a strange sort of sense. But...
Look,
Nick said, his voice growing soft, as if he were trying to cajole me.
If you want to see him punished, just think about how much it'll cost him to get his leg fixed. I can call an ambulance right now if you want.
Please don't,
the man begged, his dirty face going ashen.
I can't afford that shit. Just let me get out of here and you'll never see me again, I swear.
He started crawling toward the door before he'd even finished, dragging his shot leg behind him. It must have hurt like hell, because he groaned pathetically every time he moved, leaving a trail of bright red blood on the floor behind him. Too much blood. He was going to bleed out before he got down the stairs at this rate. From the look on his face, Nick was fine with that. I, however, was not. And after 30 seconds of this macabre fiasco, I broke. Stop, I said. Just stop. The man looked back at me in confusion. The feeling was mutual, because I couldn't believe I was doing this either. But that didn't stop me from digging into my bag for my emergency first aid kit. Hold still, I muttered, grabbing a skin-mimicking bandage from my stash and shoving his loose pants up to place it over the hole in my would-be murderer's calf. When I had the bandage where I wanted it, I shoved a bit of magic into the machine-printed spellwork woven into the adhesive. When the light faded, the bandage was bound to his leg as if it had grown there, and the man's face lit up with a euphoric smile as the magic-activated painkillers flooded into his bloodstream.
Wow, baby,
he slurred, head listing to the side as he grinned at me.
You got the good stuff.
Shut up, I growled, furious with myself for wasting an expensive healing strip on the idiot who'd shot at me because I was too soft to sit through a little moaning. That strip will hold for 6 hours. Get out of here, and if I ever see you again, I'm recouping my costs out of your face. The man nodded frantically and pushed himself up, grabbing his bloody goggles off the floor as he went.
Thank you very much, ma'am,
he said as he hobbled toward the door.
You'll never see me again, I promise.
I didn't even want to hear it. I just shoved my first aid kit back inside my bag. I also checked the notes, breathing a sigh of relief when I saw that both sets had made it through this fiasco undamaged. Forget being shot. I would have died of sheer frustration if the only thing I had to show for this mess had gotten destroyed. I was moving the papers to the slightly safer interior zipper pocket of my shoulder bag when Nick said,
What's that?
I jumped. His voice was so close he was practically speaking into my ear. By the time I whirled around, he was even closer, hooking a finger over the edge of my bag to peer inside.
Did you find something?
What's it to you? I snapped, yanking my bag away.
I felt bad about the words the moment they were out of my mouth. If Nick hadn't shown up when he did, I'd be dead right now. Even if he was invading my personal space, yelling at the man who'd saved my life was a pretty sorry way to behave. That said, now that I was no longer in imminent danger, it was finally starting to break through to me just how little sense this situation made.
Wait, I said, stepping back.
What are you doing here?
Nick gave me an innocent look.
I was following you.
A chill shot up my spine. Why?
Because you bid $2,000 on a unit that wasn't worth 20,
he explained.
You clearly saw something here that the rest of us didn't. I wanted to know what it was.
So that's why you stalked me?
I asked, incredulous.
Because you were curious?
That, and I wanted to be in position in case whatever it was turned out to be more than you could handle,
he said, a sly smile creeping across his face.
Which it did.
As he spoke, the chill in my spine grew into a full-body freeze.
You want to share, don't you?
Damn straight I want to share,
Nick said, looking down at me as if I was a goose who'd just laid a golden egg.
Considering I saved your life, I think half is fair.
Half? I cried. That's robbery! You don't even know what it is!
I know it's good enough to make you wager $2,000 at a time when you're desperate for cash,
he said with a shrug.
You think I haven't noticed how hard you've been bidding these last few months? Something's got you up against the wall. And given how much I've seen you turn units around for, I bet you're up against it for a lot.
My jaw tightened in fury. If you knew that, why'd you bid me up?
Because I'm in this for the money, just like you are,
he said, looking me straight in the eyes.
I didn't know what you saw in this place, but I knew you wouldn't have gone after it so hard if you didn't think you were going to make your money back in spades. Your instinct for these things has always been top-notch. If you thought there was money here, that was good enough for me.
That was the closest thing to a compliment I'd ever heard come out of Nick's mouth. If it hadn't cost me so much, I would have been flattered. Right now, though, his blind faith in my professional skill was highly inconvenient.
How do you know I'm not here for personal reasons?
Because I'm not an idiot,
Nick said, looking around at the trashed house.
No one breaks up a place this thoroughly and hires thugs to watch it unless there's serious money on the line. You clearly think so, too, or you wouldn't have let me bid you up so high. Now I know, and I want in.
He turned back to me, crossing his arms over his chest.
60-40 split, in my favor.
I gaped at him.
You just said 50-50.
That was before you tried to wiggle out of it,
he said, reaching down to pat his black-gloved hand against the gun I now knew he carried under his jacket.
This is clearly a much more dangerous job than you're used to. And there's the matter of the guy in the window who got away. The idiot you saved might be too grateful to talk, but the runner definitely will. That means it's just a matter of time before whoever paid for this knows you found something. If you want to keep it, you're going to need me. And 60-40 is a lot better than 70-30, which will be my next offer if you keep trying to freeze me out.
I glared murder at him. This is extortion. Nick shrugged.
That's not illegal in the DFZ.
He's right, Sybil whispered in my ear.
Shut up,
I snapped. Nick gave me a funny look, and I sighed.
Not you.
If you're serious about continuing this job, you should take him up on his offer, Sybil went on. We could use the help.
I held up my finger and stepped away, cupping my hand around the microphone at the base of my goggles so Nick wouldn't hear me.
I thought you didn't even want to do this.
I don't, Sybil said. But you're not listening to me, so I figured the best thing I can do for you now is to try to minimize the pain. It's obvious Mr. Koss is no stranger to violence, but I just replayed that fight to take measurements, and dude is fast. I don't know what he's packing to get that kind of speed, but we couldn't hire a bodyguard with moves like that for 60% of 200 grand. And that's assuming we recover anything of value. The way he's worded things, you won't have to pay him at all if you fail. 60% of nothing is nothing, which is the only number that fits our budget right now. Having someone else along to split costs and stop bullets will make this idiocy a lot less scary and expensive. Obviously, the best choice would be to run away as fast as possible. But since you're not going to do that, teaming up with Koss is the least terrible of the remaining options.
You're really selling it, I muttered, glancing over my shoulder at Nick, who was staring at me like I'd gone crazy. I couldn't say that he was wrong. If this had happened to me a year ago, I'd have already been running for the hills just like Sybil wanted me to. I definitely wouldn't have been planning how to get into even more trouble. But Nick had made a lot of good points about the cost of watching this place. You didn't pay people to keep an eye on a robbed house if you didn't think there was something still inside. Clearly, whoever had smashed up the dearly departed Dr. Lyle's home thought his work was more than just chicken scratch theories. Maybe a lot more. I didn't know the going rate for cheap thugs, but I had the feeling that anyone who went this far wasn't interested in cashing in on a pile of mail-order reagents. The fact that Nick had noticed all of this earned my respect even more than his quick hand with a gun. But what really made up my mind about the situation was the other thing he'd gotten right. I was up against a wall. Not for as much as he'd insinuated, but $10,000 might as well be a million when you need it and don't have it. And I needed it bad. If Nick wanted to help me get it, who was I to say no? All right, I said, turning back around. We've got a deal.
Great, he said. I want to know everything, but not here. Whoever put eyes on this place is probably already on their way over, which means we need to be somewhere else. Do you have a car?
When I nodded, he started hustling me toward the front door.
Then let's go.
With a final look at the trashed, bloody living room, I tightened my grip on my bag where I'd hidden the notes and marched out, Nick following on my heels like a deadly, unwanted shadow.